It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on a podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Tuesday, August 18th, 2020, and you know what that means. It's time to get nerdy, y'all. Welcome to episode number 153 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. I am Lom, also known as Mr. Nice Guy, and I'm joined by my comrade in gaming commentary, the Miggity 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 Mac, also known as Maction. Mac, what's good, man? I was gone last week. The show was killer, though. How have you been?
Oh, man, it means so much that you would think that the show went well. I mean, Ishmobile did a great job, and I feel like I muddled through somehow, so I'm glad that you liked it. It was definitely interesting. That would have been the second time that we've had a guest.
That's right.
And it would be the first time that I was the one across from the guest, because it would have been, I think, episode 74 or 70 something thereabouts.
Yeah,
70-something, where the nerd next door, a.k.a. Mrs. the Mac, subbed in. So, and
did a great job as well, as did Ishmobile.
Indeed. So anyway, no, it was a good episode. Man, I guess in the last 2 weeks, not too frightfully much has happened, aside from, you know, got a chance to meet some new people. Earlier today, I ran to the other side of the state in order to pick up some things for work. And while I was there, I got some curry, and I got a chance to hang out with a friend.
Nice.
Had lunch with a good friend.
Well, dude, I was gone last week. And it was because of the storms in the area, knocked out the power, knocked out the internet, and we're obviously back up and running now. But before that, my wife and I took a little weekend in St. Louis, and we had a really, really good time. We drove down, we did the social distancing thing, ate some really, really good food, found this beautiful creperie. It was absolutely amazing, Mac. I don't know if you're a crepe fan, but these crepes were not crepey, if you will. They were actually very, very delicious. I had to, dude. I had to. You know what? I know that was a corny joke. I haven't been on stage doing stand-up comedy in a while, so I feel like the dad jokes are taking over my comedic repertoire. So I apologize. We may have to edit that out. But the crepes were very good, is what I'm trying to say, in a corny way. We ate some really, really good donut burgers. If you've ever had a donut burger, it's basically a burger that's in between two donuts, and it's the most American thing that I've ever put into my mouth. But it was absolutely delicious, very greasy, very good. And this was to celebrate me losing 25 pounds this year. This whole weekend was. So I did not gain 25 pounds back. In fact, I came back the same weight as I left, because we did a lot of walking, we did a little bit of shopping, stayed away from people, but still managed to have a really, really good time down there. So that's all that's really new for me. Oh, and some other cool stuff has happened, Mac, that I'll tell you about off the air. Do you have anything else you want to share with the people before we hop in?
Mr. Nice Guy, let's do what we do best and hop right into the gaming news, my friend. What do you say?
I say we do that. Welcome to episode number 153, everybody. Thanks for tuning in live and or after the fact. Let's jump right in. So, Mac, let's talk about Oculus. Oculus is a company owned by Facebook that makes virtual reality headsets, and they announced something today that I'm going to share with you. Let's just read the tweet that they sent out today at 12:07 p.m. Today, we're announcing some important updates to how people log into Oculus devices while keeping their VR profile. Starting in October 2020, everyone using an Oculus device for the first time will need to log in with a Facebook account, Mac. Oculus is owned by Facebook. Previously, if you owned an Oculus virtual reality headset for gaming or whatever, you could just make an Oculus account. You didn't have to connect it to Facebook. Obviously, that's going to change for new users. Now, there is a caveat. People who currently already have the headsets and have an Oculus account will not be required to do this Facebook logging or Facebook linking until 2023. But regardless, they're forcing people to tie to Big Brother. What do you think about this? Is this them trying to promote their parent company? Or is it just them wanting to spy on people? Like, at first glance, what do you think, man?
It's not the craziest thing for the parent company to be like, you need to have an account for this in order to use that. As for spying, I mean, I feel like you're lobbing me the questions that you know will get a rise out of me.
You know what?
Facebook's spying on you. Where's my tinfoil hat?
I see that vein pulsing in your face, the one that pulses when you get angry, the one that pulses whenever I talk about Nintendo or EA or digital media. You know, that vein is pulsing right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know exactly what good it accomplishes for Facebook. If the idea is, or if your supposition is, well, hey, they're doing this in order to keep people, you know, keep people from deleting their Facebook accounts. Oh, great. The 0.0001% of Facebook users who have an Oculus Rift, sure, now they're stuck with their Facebook account. Where is that coming from? I don't know. This has me utterly perplexed.
Well, I mean, it's no secret that Facebook has been accused, and I, quite frankly, it's been proven that they track data, right? Like, it's not a coincidence, and I'm not on Facebook a lot, but it's not a coincidence that you Google something and then an ad for it shows up on Facebook. Like, they're tracking what you do. And so if you have a virtual reality headset and you have to tie it to your Facebook account, this will further require or further allow them to track what you're looking at, to track the games you're playing, to get more marketing to you. And so I think that's what frustrates people. Now, I was reading about this on Reddit because I've been researching VR for a while, and a lot of people were very upset in the Oculus subreddit. They said, well, at least Facebook is giving us enough notice so that we know not to buy their stuff anymore. And then Palmer Luckey, who I believe is the founder of Oculus, later sold it to Facebook, posted something stating that he was told when he sold it to Facebook that this would not happen. And that's what he believed, that it would never require people to tie their Oculus to their Facebook. And so Facebook has clearly backpedaled and changed their mind, according to him. So it is kind of controversial, especially because a lot of people use this strictly for gaming. They just want to have a good gaming experience without being spied on. So we'll have to see what happens, Mac. If given the choice between, let's say, an Oculus and another headset that's not tied to Facebook, would that aspect of it make you pick the one that's not tied to Facebook, or would you just go with whatever one you is better or cheaper? What would you do?
You know, I would go for a combination of features and price. I don't know as I would make the decision solely based one way or the other on Facebook integration.
Okay. Yeah, so to me, honestly, and I don't want to get too deep into it, I've been researching a lot of headsets. This really turned me off to Oculus because I don't like Facebook. I don't really like to use it. I don't like that they spy. And not that I have anything to hide, but I just don't think that that's necessary, and I don't want to be forced.
Whether or not you have anything to hide is utterly beside the point. That should
it really
always
is.
That should never be the beginning nor the end of the conversation. And I feel like anybody who's like, well, do you have anything to hide, is probably missing the point.
They're the spies that ask that question. You know, that's who wants to know. Anyway, moving on to our next news story from GameInformer.com. Before I read this news story, Mac, I want to ask you a question. When you get a new game, or when you see a game trailer or whatever it is, and let's say you start playing it, what makes you want to come back to that game? Like, what makes a game replayable for you and keeps drawing you in? Are there certain aspects? Is it DLC? I know it's not multiplayer, and I know it's not guns. So what brings Maxion back to a game over and over again?
Well, genre is a big deal to me. There are okay. certain genres that, you know, I really like and enjoy, and I find them very both enjoyable and cathartic, and just, sure. you know, they're my jam, really.
Jam.
Yeah, jam. But I feel like there are, you know, replayability is a big thing for bringing me back. There are some games, even within subgenres, that are built in such a way that you can come back to them easily, and there will be differences, like, you know, a procedurally generated
okay.
insert thing
okay.
here is usually pretty good for pulling me back in.
Okay, gotcha. Awesome answer, and that's what I wanted to know, because for me, well, we'll read the article first. This is about Ghosts of Tsushima. It is written by Daniel Tack. It says, we'll skip a little bit, but it says, Ghost of Tsushima is getting a free cooperative multiplayer experience later this fall, known as Ghost of Tsushima Legends. It's an online experience that suits 2 to 4 people that can all play as unique character classes. offerings differ on the amount of friends or random matchmaking players that are playing at the time. It also says four players can take on wave-based survival quests, including incredibly challenging encounters featuring Ani. I have not played the game yet, so I don't know what Ani is. Shortly after Ghost of Tsushima Legends launches, a raid experience will be released for four players. So, Mac, to me, and I tweeted this out from the Two Nerds account, this is how you keep a community active. Like, Ghost of Tsushima was launched as a single player offering with no multiplayer, right? I don't believe there were any announcements of DLC. And now they're saying that we are going to give you co-op multiplayer. Oh, by the way, Mac, they're going to give it to people for free, and they're going to have a raid. Now, this is reminiscent of what Rockstar did with Grand Theft Auto V several years ago. We knew we were going to get GTA Online, but they only released the single player at launch, forcing people to really enjoy that single player experience, learn the mechanics of the game, and really kind of get a feel for it before they said, all right, now hop online and just mess around. And to me, this is what brings me back to a game. Give me some free DLC that does not split the community, that allows me to re-examine, re-experience this universe that I enjoyed, that I loved, but don't give it to me all at once and make me choose between single player and multiplayer. So I think they did a brilliant job here. I don't know if you'd agree or if this type of thing appeals to you, but I really like their marketing here.
I feel like it's a good move. I'm glad for those people who are into that they're getting it. And I mean, I think you're right. For people who were already inclined toward Ghosts of Tsushima, this is probably a slam dunk and making a big difference for them. For my part, though, I do feel like I have to go back and add one additional thing. As mentioned in the chat by Spear, I'll call you because I think I'm going to slaughter the rest of the name. Storyline is a big deal for most people. And while I was initially thinking, yeah, but most of what I played, like Mega Man here in the background, looking over me fondly, was very storyline light. Some of the games I really, really like for example, Final Fantasy Tactics, was an amazing game from a storyline perspective. Just brilliant. So yeah, story definitely holds some sway with me as well. And in fairness, I had to throw that one out there.
No, that's good. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, I think back to the time that I spent playing The Last of Us Part 2 this year. Fantastic game, probably at this point, my game of the year. I'm not going to pick it up again because I got done with the single player. Now, if they came back later and said, hey, we're going to add multiplayer or we're going to add co-op, I'd say, oh, well, absolutely. Let me hop back in. And for a game like Ghost of Tsushima that is a new IP, that move makes people remember the game for longer, as opposed to playing the single player game, putting it down and being done with it for the rest of the year. Now people say, oh, I played it, and then I picked it up a couple months later and played it again, because that DLC that they announced is not coming until fall. It gives Ghost of Tsushima a better chance of being a Game of the Year winner, Game of the Year candidate, because people played it for longer. Mac, I'm sure you've experienced this where you play a single player game and you love it, but you forget how good it was over years or over months, right? Because you just don't remember and you've played other stuff since then. So keeping games relevant is important. Let's move on to our next news story, unless you have any other comments on that, man. I think we pretty much summed it up.
I'm good.
Well, this is a big one as well. And I noticed you guys didn't talk about this last week, which is good because I wanted to talk about it. So I'm glad I'm here for the conversation. Halo Infinite is being delayed and the internet was lit on fire because of it. And I'm not even going to read a news article about this, Mac. It's simple enough that we can just talk about it. Halo is Microsoft's flagship franchise. It's one of the most iconic franchises in all of gaming. I had people tweeting at me about this. I had people like subtweeting about it, angry. Like, one person tweeted at me and said something like, they're delaying this, this is terrible. And then someone else responded and said, well, do you think that developers should have to crunch to get this game out? They could ruin their lives. So there's a lot of opinions on this, man. How do you think this is going to affect Xbox Series X sales? Like, do you think it makes a difference? Do you think that people are going to buy it anyway? Do you think, what are your thoughts on Halo, the biggest game being delayed?
Well, I think it could quite possibly impact sales. I mean, what they showed was, I'm given to understand, lackluster. And because that is what was going to launch on the console, You've said it a million times, and I think I'm inclined to agree with you that consoles sell because of exclusives. And if they don't have an exclusive to really help launch the Xbox One X, then, or the Xbox Series X, then what have they got else to offer that the other places can't give them?
Yeah, and I'm with you 100%. I think about things that could have made me buy the Xbox Series X, and there's really nothing, because I have a PC, I have an Xbox One S, and I have Game Pass, and so I can play all of the games. But I know for a fact, just having experienced gaming for a couple decades, that when people are making a new game and it's going to be on a new console, it is optimized for that console, right? So we think about Legends of Zelda that have been cross-gen. They're always better on the newer hardware. And so I know Halo's going to be that way too. And so that's the one thing that could have made me consider purchasing a Series X, is wanting to experience Halo in the way that it was intended. And now that it's not coming out day one and it's been pushed back to 2021, there is absolutely no way that I'll even consider buying a Series X. So I don't know how much it'll hurt sales, but I think that it will hurt the brand, because I think less people will hop into Game Pass. I think that less people will, I don't know, I just think it's going to hurt the brand. And I think that's kind of undisputable. So, Mac, anything else you want to say about that before we continue, man?
Well, I mean, it seems like Microsoft's gotten a little bit of a 1-2 punch, because as we found out earlier this week, that that Apple is not going to allow the xCloud to work on their stuff. So, I mean, it seems like Microsoft is just getting punches from all angles here right now.
They are. And when you think about the number of people that have iOS devices, love it or hate it, it's a huge portion of people who play video games. So to not allow iPads and iPhones to use Project xCloud, it's a huge hit to Microsoft. So we'll have to see how this all shakes out. One last news story. Today was the Nintendo Showcase, Mac. Nintendo Indie Showcase. And several indies were announced. I just want to let the people know, in case any of these are big names that you were excited for, because some of them have previously been released on Steam, I believe, and now they're coming to Switch. There's a few that were announced today that were also released today, which I always love to see. The first one is Spitfire. It's a cozy management sim about dying and saying goodbye. By the way, this article is from Kotaku by Mike Fahey. What else was released today? There's a timed exclusive called A Short Hike that was also released on PC last year. Manifold Garden, until now was previously an Apple Arcade exclusive, came out on Switch today. And another one that's in the same vein as being an Apple Arcade game is a puppet-based RPG, Takeshi and Hiroshi, launches on the Switch later today. And then later this year, we're getting a ton of cool stuff. The biggest one to me, Mac, is we're getting Torchlight 3, and we're getting a new samurai game from the people who made Bastion. You ever play Bastion back in the day?
Absolutely, man. You kid raged out for a while. Good old Supergiant games. Narration was key in that.
It was so good. And there's part of me, that's one of those games where I always think I need to go back and do it again. But it's just never going to happen with all the stuff there is to play. But let us know in the chat what indies you are hyped for. I was really hoping we would get some news today about the Hollow Knight sequel, and we did not. So we'll have to wait for that for later. Mac, that has been our news for the week, my friend.
Real quick, before we depart from news, a quick correction. Uncle Ruckus was kind enough to point out that I must have misread. He says xCloud is in beta and Apple doesn't want apps in beta on the App Store. And so that's the behind the decision there. I still think that that's a, you know, that that's a bit of a knock to Microsoft. And I still stand by saying, you know, they're taking a lot of hits, but I you know, see where you're coming from. Probably unfair of me to characterize that it wasn't going to happen at all, just, you know, that it seems like in the preliminary it's not, you know, not going to happen. But Uncle Ruckus, thank you for adding some much needed context and added detail to that. So thank you. But all right, since we're done with the news, it's time to move on to a little bit of gaming history. Let's look into the past and see the cool things that that came out this last week in years that came before, and we have some good ones. For starters, I'll start with obviously the greatest runaway hit console ever released by Nintendo or anybody else. Released in 1994 this last week, the Virtual Boy. Yes, the system.
I want one.
Oh, well, I mean, who could blame you?
Just so I could say I have it, you know what I mean?
It launched with 4 games, and I want to say it all maxed out at something like 15 games total. But the Virtual Boy, I mean, fantastic. Now, I will actually throw out there, because it, you know, is relevant to my academic interests, that there is the component of the headset that displays and creates the 3D imaging, or the pseudo 3D imaging, actually relies on a mirror that basically flips back and forth.
That's correct.
Bouncing the image to each eye in a, you know, stereoscopic strobe effect across it. Not entirely unsimilar from what you would see in a beam splitter inside of, say, you know, an FTIR or something like that. But anyway, that wedged mirror oscillating back and forth, combined with the way that we, you know, that they were drawing the photographs and or drawing the images and the persistence of vision and the like, made for a very, very interesting thing. Back in the day, I believe it was the YouTuber Ben Heck who actually took apart a Virtual Boy in order to try and rebuild it and build it a little bit better, use some lighter components and things like that. But he has a very detailed breakdown of the technology in there, as well as, you know, some of the various things that he thought could make improvements now that we're, 25 years on or say. So anyway, definitely good if you want to learn more about the Virtual Boy. Mr. Nice Guy, I will keep my eyes open at yard sales if I ever go to another one. And if I find one, you better believe it's got your name on it.
I appreciate it. I would love to have a Virtual Boy just because it's a part of failed history. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we learn things from every iteration. Things get eventually better. And those lessons that we learned from the Virtual Boy have, you know, in some ways helped move us to where we are now. So I'll move on to the next one. The release of the Sega Genesis in 1989. That console, of course, launched seven games in the United States. It had the Altered Beast was a pack-in game. But I think the thing that's really super cool about the original, you know, the Model 1 Sega Genesis is the sound chips inside. So they were made by Yamaha, which I know most of us probably think about Yamaha in terms of sports bikes right now, sports motorcycles.
Yep.
But back in the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, Yamaha was very well known as well for their music stuff, especially their keyboards and the like. And those Yamaha chips that were used inside of the Sega Genesis are of phenomenal quality. It's been said by people who are much more technically savvy than myself that the Sega Genesis had some of the best audio hardware on the market at that time, but it kind of gets a bad rap from people who are reflecting on video game music in the, you know, now times, because the interface with which to make the music on the Sega Genesis was not as streamlined or as user-friendly as the Super Nintendo's was. And as a result, the music suffered a bit. One of the things that I think is particularly splendid is there are some chip tunes where someone has taken Super Nintendo music, some of the real good, classy musics, and they've programmed them in the Sega Genesis sound chips, and hearing them side by side, I would certainly say that I feel like the Sega Genesis does a better job of making the sounds than the Super Nintendo. And I see your face, Mr. Nice Guy. For those of you listening,
this is blasphemous.
He's shaking his head. He's cringing. I mean,
I was a Nintendo kid, man. I'm all about that. Donkey Kong Country 2, man. Some of the best music of all time in a video game.
Some fantastic music for sure, but I think, and I will scrape together some music and I'll send it your way. And you can hear the it played on the SNES sound chips and played on the Sega Genesis sound chips. And, you know, there's room for reasonable people to disagree, but this is not a reasonable disagreement. You will have to concede this point when you hear it. Ears on, you will appreciate it, I am sure.
We'll see.
Last but not least, the third thing that I wanted to highlight from video game history for this week would be the launch in 2000 of Chrono Cross for the PS1. Is that a game that you ever played, Mr. Nice Guy?
I believe I did once or twice, but it was not a game that I really got deep into, not at all.
Gotcha. Well, obviously it was a sequel of sorts to the original Chrono Trigger, which was released on the Super Nintendo. Still plenty of characters that you could use. There were synergies and the like that you could take advantage of inside of the team selection. A very enjoyable, albeit because they were trying to kind of cram it in my opinion, to the Chrono Trigger storyline as well, that there were components of the background and the mythos of the world that absolutely felt a little bit like, huh? You know, there was a lot of that when you're playing Chrono Cross, or at least for me, and maybe it's just because of my age at the time. It is a game that I look forward to going back and playing because I have many very fond memories of staying up late at night, sleepovers at a friend's house because he had a PlayStation before I had a PlayStation, and he also had plenty of excellent games for that PS1. So plenty of fond memories. I one of these days going to go back and play it, but nonetheless, it still holds a special place in my heart just, you know, for being what it was to me at that point in time in my life. So, forgive me for getting a little bit sappy, but...
No, you're getting nostalgic. We like nostalgia here.
Well, it's what it's almost all about, this whole video game history thing. And so that's what I had. Mr. Nice Guy, was there anything you wanted to add?
No, just that Super Nintendo music was phenomenal, and that's all I have to say about that.
And, you know, I think I agree. Great composers, and a very good intuitive music making system for the SNES. I think that if Sega had put as much time into their music making software for the Sega Genesis as Nintendo did for the SNES, I think the conversation would be very different. I think it would actually be flipped the other way, but nonetheless, that's just something that we're going to have to postulate what ifs at another time, because that's all the time that we have for gaming history.
Awesome. Well, now it is time for the topic of the week, where we talk about something relevant in gaming, the hottest story in gaming, and give our opinions on it. Now, if you've been anywhere but under a rock, you know that this week Epic put on their boxing gloves, or rather took off their gloves, and went head to head with one of the biggest behemoths in all of tech, in all of gaming, in all of everything, Mac. They went head-to-head with Apple, and here's what went down. For those of you who don't know, Epic makes Fortnite one of the biggest games in video games right now. And here's what this article says on Polygon by Sumit Kakar. It says, and we're gonna edit, right? We're gonna read a little bit of it. Apple and Google removed the app from their respective marketplaces on Thursday for violating the rules in reference to Fortnite. Immediately afterwards, Fortnite maker Epic Games filed a separate antitrust lawsuit against the two companies, and we're not going to talk too much about the legal aspect right now, but it goes on to say Epic also staked out its position with a cheeky parody of 1984 Apple's famous Super Bowl commercial from that year. Mac, bottom line, I guess Fortnite added some stuff to the app without getting it pre-approved by Apple. That's my understanding anyway. And then Apple chose to remove Fortnite from their app store. Google did the same thing. Fortnite is fighting back. Fortnite's a big, big, big IP. Probably was making Apple a good amount of money, I'd imagine. Some people say Apple wasn't profiting at all. I cannot believe that. What do you think about this whole thing? Smart move by Apple? Too picky? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think let's take a minute and step back and just ask ourselves, what if it wasn't Fortnite, right?
It's a great question.
What if it wasn't owned by Epic? What if this was just a question of an app in an app store, made changes that they didn't disclose to the person, to the people who are in charge of running that app store? And then the changes that weren't disclosed were made public. You know, is that something that you as the app store runner would feel comfortable with letting stand?
If it was not Fortnite?
Yeah, if it was just anything. But somebody gives you an app, Mr. Nice Guy, and they say, hey, here's this app. This is what it does. And then it does other things that weren't disclosed. Is that for concern for you?
It is cause for concern. You know what's funny? It makes me think about Facebook a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because you can make like a fan page on Facebook and have people like your fan page, you know? And then you can later on change the name of your fan page. I mean, so hypothetically, you could make it something that's dirty, something that's offensive, and then you have all these people that have liked it, and with the day and age that we live in, we know how that could cause problems. People could screenshot stuff, they could send it to employers, it could cause all kinds of issues. So, long answer to a short question, no, I would not be okay with that, Mac.
Okay. Well, just for a little bit more in depth, if you don't mind, if I...
Please.
So, one of the things, the thing that was changed... was that previously, and we'll go into more depth on this later when we hit legalese, because there's a lawsuit involved, so we'll dust off the legal paperwork. But in essence, previous to this period of time, August 13th, I believe it was, the thing that was changed in the app was that you could purchase V-Bucks directly from Epic, instead of having to go through the in-app purchasing, payment processing. And further, so you would be like, I want that dance. I have to have the Carlton. I need 1,000 V-Bucks. Let's go ahead and buy that. And the pop-up would say, hey, do you want to buy for, and I'm just going to throw numbers out there because I don't play Fortnite, so I don't, these currency exchanges off the top of my head. But they're like, do you want to buy 1,000 V-Bucks for $10? Or do you want to buy directly from Epic 1,000 V-Bucks for $8? 20% off! Which button are you clicking?
I mean, I would obviously click the one buying it directly from them.
Obviously, yeah. And so that's where the fallout started, because that is something that they didn't disclose was going to be a change in their app, and it's something that they kind of contractually agreed not to do, but we're not going to get into that right yet. We're going to save that for a little bit there, right?
To answer your question, like, I feel like we live in a world, and I see this every single day, where how popular you are, how mm-hmm. big you are, or how much money you have makes people make exceptions for you. Mm-hmm. You can get free stuff because you're wealthy. You know, when you go to a certain store, when you go to a certain event, right? If you're a VIP, I guess it's technically not free because you paid more to get in, but you get my point. You get special treatment.
Sure.
And I kind of like that Apple is putting a stop to that in their own little way. You know, they're saying, you know what? It doesn't matter who you are. If you're going to be on our store, you need to follow the rules, right? And you agreed to them, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, Apple is the same type of organization that would ask for exceptions to those exact type of rules, you know, if someone was putting them into an antitrust lawsuit.
You know, let me just throw this out there. Epic / Fortnite is not your friend. Apple, not your friend. Google, not your friend. And every time the option is there, yes, 100%, the companies will seek special privileges for themselves and for nobody else. And that's just the self-interested side of things that we see every single day.
Right.
But if you don't mind, there's more to the story. of what's going on. You've heard about the hashtag Free Fortnite, right?
I have heard about it, yeah.
What have you heard about it?
I've just heard that people are tweeting it out trying to get Fortnite back on there, right? Trying to say they're siding with Fortnite effectively.
Yeah, yeah. And it's definitely something that's been pushed a lot by Fortnite themselves. To add to just sort of the general landscape of everything that's been going on, that video parodying the, you know, the 1984 thing, right, by Apple, that was ready to go the day that they got, you know, that they got booted from the App Store. Mr. Nice Guy, does it take time to develop, to write, produce, record a commercial?
It absolutely does, yeah. And they had it ready to go, yeah.
Additionally, they had 65-page lawsuits filed in federal court minutes after their apps were taken down. Mr. Nice Guy, I know you're not a lawyer, but do you suspect that it takes a little bit of time to get a 65-page federal lawsuit ready to rock and roll?
Yeah, unless it's put together by a robot, as Mac would say.
Third thing. They had the hashtag Free Fortnite, and they had all of their marketing stuff ready to go within minutes of the app being taken down.
Mr. Are you implying that they knew what they were doing?
I not only think they know what they were doing, I think they've been planning this for months. Just to couch themselves as the scrappy underdog. We're talking about people fighting each other over, you know, millions, billions of dollars per month in revenue. Free Fortnite? I mean, if I may editorialize for a moment, and Fortnite has never engaged in practices that were, shall we say, anti-competitive, right? Like, they've never, like, taken a game from Steam or something and released it exclusively and only on their platform, right?
They have, actually.
They have?
Yeah.
Gosh, I mean, I'm just so shocked, Mr. Nice Guy. Somebody who's, you know, a company that seems to have their rallying cry be all about freedom! It seems to be that's not exactly what they're very concerned about.
Well, no, it's true, and I think, and I don't want to speak out of turn here, Mac, but I feel like, don't get it twisted, for those of you who are out here listening.
Oh, we're not saying that we.
No, don't get it twisted. Like, we're not saying we side with Apple, right?
Sure. Oh, no, that's why I opened with Fortnite's not your friend, Apple's not your friend, Google's not your friend. These are all people who are not your friend and don't care about you. They care about your money. And, yeah, so, I mean, we're not siding with Apple. We're just saying, Epic, please, we have long enough memories to know that you're not the fighter of games, of game platform agnosticism, or free the games for every platform, which are some claims that have been directly made. It's a rich claim when it's like, we just need to go a few months back to look at some games that I wanted to play on Steam that weren't going to be there because you right. exclusived them to your store.
Well, let's end with what Galvatron has to say. He says, Maxion made a good point. Gamers seem to think that the industry cares about them and their system wars. These corporations couldn't care less about you. The only thing they like about you is that green paper in your pocket. Now, we're not super cynical, but I get the sentiment of what he's saying. This is a business, right? And things can get really, really scrappy. Things can get really, really rough. Friendships go out the door. Business partnerships go out the door when the almighty dollar is involved. And that is what we're seeing here. That has been our topic of the week.
All right. Well, now let's turn to a crowdfunding project by hopefully a truly scrappy underdog that's trying to get off of the ground. I'm posting a link in the chat so that if you're here with us live, you can look at it live alongside of us. What we are looking for is what we're looking at is a game called Nocturne. Nocturne is an RPG with rhythm combat. I can't imagine why such a thing would appeal to little old Maxion, can you?
Because you like Pump It Up?
Heck yes, because I am a big fan of rhythm games. And this wouldn't be the first Kickstarter that I had ever featured. Of course, you know, we're on episode 153, so I'm sure to, you know, do a repeat on some of these, but it's not the first rhythm game from Kickstarter. Nonetheless, this game is looking for $53,000 in order to get off the ground. They've got 29 days left to go, and so far they are only at a little over 2,000. Prassy Studios is based out of Canada. It's their first Kickstarter, at least, you know, under this name. And yeah. So if you are interested in the game, we've got JRPG elements, JRPG definitely, pixel art, some quite lovely stuff. I'm very interested to see how some of the pixel art will improve over time, because, you know, there are some rough cuts here and there, but I'm looking forward to it. If you're looking the bare minimum to get into this at a level that will get you the game would be about $16 US or 21 Canadian for the full digital release of Nocturne to be released on PC in August 2023. Now, that's a little bit longer scale than we usually see in the Kick or Kickstart segment. Very often what we see is we see, you know, oh, it'll be done in a year. It'll be done in a couple of years. But 3 years is a little bit longer of a thing. Storyline-wise, we're talking about, you know, it's a post-apocalyptic world that you're dealing with. You know, the fighting, the combat that's going on, of course, being based off of the rhythm mechanics. In the, you know, sort of descriptions there, they show people using D, F, and J, K for the various buttons, much in a sort of Guitar Hero style going on. So you don't have to use your feet, although I guarantee you somebody, maybe me, maybe somebody else, will make sure to use a dance pad with it, for sure. But yeah, so that's what they're looking at. There is some stretch goals that they've also put in there. They're not planning on animated cutscenes or things like that until they've reached 80,000, 115,000 for online leaderboards, and, you know, some more mystery stuff going from there. In a move that I do particularly enjoy, especially because this is a game that has a long-term look, they're looking 3 years out. You can get alpha access to the game, which they are saying is probably going to be deliverable around the neighborhood of August 2022, which is still a long ways away. We're looking a couple of years we gotta wait, but $57. If you like this kind of thing and you really, really want to be there, and as someone who's participated in an alpha access for a Kickstarter before, I can say that it was very, very fulfilling experience for me, because that was Chasm.
Yeah, one of your favorites.
As, you know, somebody who did a Kickstarter, who went for it at an, you know, at that kind of early access level, I feel like there are things in the game that are a result of my feedback, which is a very cool thing. So anyway, there we go. Mr. Nice Guy, what are you thinking about this?
So I like the idea. It kind of, in theory, reminds me of Crypt of the Necrodancer, which is a rhythm-based game on the Nintendo Switch where you basically move in rhythm with the music. I don't know if you're familiar with that game, but it reminds me of that. The one fatal flaw that I see in this Kickstarter is the timing of it, because I looked at it and it says that they are going to be showcasing at PAX Online. I just Googled the dates for PAX Online. It is September 12th. Through September 20th. Now, right now it's August 18th. They have 29 days left on their Kickstarter. So by the time we get to September 12th, when they will be showcasing, there will be about 5 days left on their Kickstarter.
Maybe just enough time for them to get all that hype and, you know, and get those last few backs that they need.
That's one way of looking at it. But if you were doing a Kickstarter, Mac, is that how you would do it? I wouldn't. Yeah, so I don't agree with that business decision, but I do like the concept of this game. It looks really cool, and it's only $16 for a digital copy. I think that is very reasonable. It looks like graphically it's something that we're seeing a lot of. We're seeing that 16-bit style that I love, the Messenger and all kinds of other games being built in that style. Shovel Knight, yeah. That style of game. So I like what they're doing here, and I don't really have any other complaints.
All right. Well, you know me, Mr. Nice Guy. If you're going to ask for my money with a Kickstarter, you have to prove that you can bring together all the various elements of a video game. Programming, user interface, music, graphics, all of it. And no better way to do that than by showing me not pre-renders, but by a playable demo. And it has a playable demo available on Steam. It's Nocturne Prelude, if you want to check that out for yourself.
Is this PC only, this Kickstarter?
Yes.
Okay.
They have not listed any plans to release on other platforms other than the PC. It's possible that those will be a part of the deeper stretch goals. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at one that's a stretch goal that's at the 155,000 level, and it shows a D-pad on it. And it says locked, so I would assume that that is the reward just based on the graphic there. But that's just a shot in the dark. I'm just trying to do that. So for my part, though, that's the bare minimum. You have to have a demo. And it does. And while I have not had the time to play it yet, I look forward to doing so. And for right now, that does mean that it gets a kickstart from me. I like the look, I like the idea, I'm a sucker for this sort of stuff, the price point's okay, and I am no stranger to waiting around a little while for a Kickstarter. So it's a kickstart for me. And Mr. Nice Guy?
You know what? I have a heart today. There's things I don't like about it. I think that's a huge mistake to launch the Kickstarter, so far in advance of you showcasing it at one of the biggest gaming expos of all time. So I think that's a mistake, especially because it's online that they're showcasing it. So they'll literally showcase it online, and then video of that showcase is going to be all over the internet. I would have wanted to get more of that momentum, but other than that, I like it. Kickstart.
Excellent. And we encourage you who are here with us live, or even those of you who are listening to us after the fact, just shout out Kick or Kickstart on your commute or what have you. We're tabulating the results from here. And so far, with a little bit of one or two detractions in the chat, it looks like most of us are on board with the Kickstart. And so that's been Kick or Kickstart.
Very good. Well, now it is time for Nerdflex.
Woohoo.
A segment where you, the viewer, try to stump the host, and you never really do succeed. Well, this week we got a couple questions from our test bank of questions. Let's dive right in. Mac,
excellent.
You guys
get those questions ready in the chat. Sorry to steal the thunder, Mr. Nice Guy. Take it away.
No, you're good. Here is the first question. And if any questions pop up in the chat, let me know, Mac. Mm-hmm. But the first one deals with Pokemon. I bet Spenis will know the answer to this if he's in the chat. Which spoon-bending psychic sued Nintendo for his likeness to Pokemon Kadabra?
Oh, no. I know this one because I actually did a legalese on it a while back.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I want to say it was like episode 80 or so. He was like, they're using my likeness. Bending spoons was my thing.
Okay. Should we just take the L on this one? Because I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know who this is. The answer is Uri Geller. Or Uri Geller.
Okay, yep. It's been a while. Uri Geller.
Okay, so here's the next bank question. Legend of Zelda. In Link's Awakening, what happens if you return to the shop after stealing?
Does he straight up kill you, or does he like turn you into a bunny rabbit?
No, he kills you, but it's almost like a blast of fire, almost like a Hadouken or a Kamehameha.
Oh.
And then if you go back to buy stuff later, he's like, you stole from me and you thought you'd get away with it. Now you're gonna pay. And then he just like lights you up with fire, like with a beam. So yeah. Let's see what the answer is. Yeah, it basically just says he kills you. So I gave way too much detail.
Hey.
But that is the answer.
No, that's what matters. We got it. We at least got one. So from Ishmobile, we have, in Ocarina of Time, in order to get King Zora to move aside, which of the following do you have to do? So the answers are A, collect the bottle with a note inside. B, travel through the underwater tunnel to Lake Hylia. C, complete the diving channel. Or D, play Zelda's lullaby at the waterfall.
Oh, that's a good question. I kind of feel like it's play Zelda's lullaby.
I feel confident that it is collect the bottle with the note inside, because if you'll remember, the note says that she, Princess Ruto, is stuck inside of Jabu Jabu's belly.
Dude, it's been so long. I'm gonna go with my answer, just
okay.
In case.
He's going with D. I am going with A. A and D are both correct. It was a trick question that all of them were right. Ugh.
And a trick answer.
Well, at least we remembered some of the same things. Well, thank you everybody for your questions and for being a part of Nerdflex today. So I guess what that leaves now is a little bit of legalese. And as promised, we're going to return to the Epic v. Apple, because it's not just Epic v. Apple, it's also Epic v. Google, because the same similar thing was happened. So not only were there initial lawsuits that were launched within minutes of the apps being removed from the App Store, there was also a temporary restraining order filed just a few days ago. So here's what I'm going to say, because I think one thing that's interesting is that the temporary restraining order that they filed for, right, the way you do those sorts of things is you say, hey, Your Honor, you know, to the judge, we are going to win the case that is before the court that's going to be heard, right? We're going to win it, no question about it. And we're going to win it, but we shouldn't even need to wait until the case is fully heard for you to grant some relief. And that's the form of stuff that they asked for in their temporary restraining order. And I'm going to talk just a brief little bit about what they asked for in their temporary restraining order and why that's not great. So, but first, let's talk about Fortnite version 13.40. That was given on August 3rd to Apple, and sometime around there also given to Google, for them to review. And they basically pushed them the code, and they said, okay, here's our newest update to the game. Go ahead, take a look over it. And with it, they're supposed to include documentation that describes what's changed, why it's changed, and what will work differently, if anything. This is the kind of stuff that when you click on an app, it'll say, what's new? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it would not surprise you to learn that Apple does, you know, that Apple may or may not have the time to scan every single line of code. And especially if someone's been on very good behavior for the last however many, you know, years your relationship has been going on, maybe you feel like, maybe I don't need to look at every single line of code. Maybe, you know, maybe we can just take your word on it, which is precisely why this sort of thing is frustrating. But they went ahead and they submitted that on August the 3rd. It got approved and pushed out shortly thereafter, but it wasn't until August the 13th that Apple sprang their, hey, you can buy direct from us. And the way that they did that, and they define it inside of their lawsuits, specifically the temporary restraining order, is that previous to that, in August 3rd, or thereabouts, when 13.40 was live, it would query the servers of Epic, and it would say, hey, what payment options do we have for purchasing V-Bucks? And the server would ping back and say, Apple's in-app purchase method. And so that's the only thing that would show up.
Correct.
And then on the 13th, they updated it to say, hey, guess what? There's two methods for purchasing V-Bucks. You can also purchase directly from us with that sort of thing. We've gone into that. But one of the things that that Epic has said is they've said, hey, guess what? We didn't actually change anything in the code we gave to you. We changed the code on our side, so it's totally not the same thing, and we totally didn't break our contract.
Yeah.
So, which...
technicalities.
It's a technicality that I don't think you can win on, because, you know, software being what it is, if some of our, you know, our, I don't know, coding friends want to weigh in, we'd love to hear about that. Is that in fact going, you know, would that in fact fly for you be like, well, we changed it, but we didn't really change it. Mm-hmm. So that it's probably not going to hang up.
Right, right.
Navigating the lawsuits. And again, there's hundreds of pages for you to read over in all of this. But the short version of the whole debacle that Fortnite has said is they've said that basically Apple and Google are monopolies in their own right. And they can't do this sort of thing. 70-30 is an egregious affront. The judicial system, you need to break them down using the Sherman Antitrust Act. Now, long ago, the idea of the antitrust was sort of overly broadly written, and the courts did provide, a basis for evaluating these things. And they said that the real question needs to be consumer harm and unreasonable restraint of trade. Which is the level that Fortnite, that Epic, has to show. They have to say that there's an unreasonable restraint of trade, which is a really hard case for them to make, because a 70-30 split, which is what they're getting on those in-app purchases for both Apple and Google, they have to make the argument that not only is it unreasonable strain of unreasonable restraint of trade, but they also have to say, if but for Apple's monopoly, Apple could not charge 70-30, which is a hard road and a hard argument to make, because Google is also charging 70-30.
So who's getting 70?
Yeah, Epic is getting 70.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, they're getting 70. Google and Apple, they're getting 30. Great clarification. Okay. But also, Steam takes a 70-30 cut. All the, you know, basically every single storefront is in video gaming is taking a 70-30 cut. So making the argument that Apple is a, and they also make the separate argument, Google is a monopoly, and they say, but for their monopoly power, which you have to break up and get rid of, they could not charge 30% to the storefront, 70% to us developers. Hard way to make that things. And this, and also, as Ish Mobile's pointing out in the chat, they themselves, when they offered a thing, they say in the temporary restraining order, they say that these are savings they could pass on to the consumer. And it's just like, but they only offered it for, you know, $8 out of $10. They only offered a 20% discount, not a 30% discount. Where'd the extra 10% go, Epic? Is that what's an okay amount to charge? And also, Epic, you are the sole determiner of what the value of this virtual currency is. I mean, just going off those numbers is kind of nonsensical. You can say whatever you want to say with those. But and I know we're running up against time and we like to keep this straight, but Mr. Nice Guy, you had a question and I have just one line from the temporary restraining order that I want to throw
please,
out there.
Please.
Oh no, your question?
Oh, it was going to be more of a statement. It makes me want to side less with Epic. Because they're just being childish basically.
Yeah.
I lost my thought, but that's basically what I was going to say. They want the exposure of being on the App Store. They want the exposure of being on the Google Store, but they don't want to pay for it. And to me, that's just not right.
Yep, I agree with you. And you know me, I'm no fan of Apple. I'm no Apple fanboy. I'm not a fan of Apple. I'm not a big fan of Google. Not a fan of Nintendo. But nonetheless, the things that they ask for in their temporary... The things that they ask for in their temporary restraining order is they want them to restore the dev tools, because they don't have access to Apple dev tools anymore. They want to restore the Fortnite game, and they want the court to order them to restore the most recent version of the game. And they say,
yeah,
we want you to do this immediately with allowing us our direct buy. Oh, they make this ridiculous claim about it being, how was it phrased? Hang on, I'm sorry, I'm consulting my notes. They phrased it as, they made the argument that Epic was an essential facility, that the App Store was an essential facility and they could not be reasonably excluded from the App Store. Is that a claim that you feel like holds water, Mr. Nice Guy? That any schlub off the street can just say, Apple, you cannot exclude me from the App Store?
No, because they have terms and conditions.
Yep, yep.
And if you don't follow them, then you get booted. That's it.
And these are the types of claims that, you know, Fortnite, that Epic is making with a straight face, with lawyers, but here's the quote that I think really sums it all up. Quote, "It is strongly in the public interest to force Apple to distribute Fortnite with the direct purchase option." Quick edit there, I got that a little bit wrong. That's what I said the exact quote was, but that was a paraphrasing. The exact quote is, "Finally, a preliminary injunction that preserves status quo access to the latest Fortnite content for millions of players at lower prices is strongly in the public interest." Same argument, slightly different wording. My bad. And so that's just, that just sums it all up. It is in your interest, video game player, for the courts to force Apple to accept Fortnite's direct purchase option inside of the App Store. It's in the public interest. It's not in their interest. They open up their lawsuit by saying, "We are not asking for money, Your Honor. We are asking for fairness, for truth, for justice, for the American way." And, well, it's in the public interest, so it must be good. I have strong feelings about this, as I'm sure you can tell, but that's all the time we have right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. That's okay. This was great, dude.
Well, thanks. I'm glad you like it. That's been some legalese.
Well, Mac, would you like to take us home?
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody, for coming around, for participating, for being a part of episode 153 of Two Nerds in a Pod. It's been great to have you. For anybody who's new, welcome, welcome. For those of you who've been here for a while, you know how it goes. Same bat time, same bat channel, 8 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Central, here on twitch.tv/Two Nerds in a Pod. Keep it nerdy, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Deuces.